Model Test 9.
Part 3. Listening Comprehension.
Section A. Question 11. Well, I pretty much know what I'm going to take, but what a day, eh? Registering is so stressful. Can't there be another way?
Telephone registration would mean we didn't have to deal with all the same headaches.
What does the woman mean? Question 12. You've been at university for over a year. Have you had any problems adjusting to campus life?
Well, you know, we all have our ups and downs, but none to speak of.
What does the woman mean?
Question 13. I hear you have dropped out of the marching band, but I thought you loved it. All the traveling, playing before big crowds.
I do. But with all that time away from my studies, my grades are really starting to slip.
What does the man mean? Question 14. I'm going over to see a car someone has for sale. With all your experience as a mechanic, I'd appreciate your opinion.
That was 20 years ago. Cars have changed so much. I'm not sure how much help I might be, but sure, I'll come along for the ride.
What does the man imply? Question 15. Congratulations, Tom. I heard you got a job with the Wilson Company.
Thanks, Professor Smith. But it's a little too soon for congratulations. All I got so far is an interview, early next week, on Tuesday.
What does the man imply?
Question 16. I'm really torn. I need a new bicycle, and I just can't decide which one to get. There are just too many different kinds to choose from.
As far as I'm concerned, a bike is a bike. It's just transportation.
What does the woman mean?
Question 17. I gave the student loans office so much information and so many statements, so why do they need more documentation? All I am asking for is a few thousand extra on my loan application.
You know how it is. That's the way things work over there. They just need to see that everything is on the right track before they approve things.
What does the man mean? Question 18. Gregory will be leaving this Sunday, and it's also his birthday. I'm thinking of throwing him a farewell and birthday party.
That's a good idea. We can arrange that. But in the meantime, let's just keep it between the two of us.
What does the man suggest they should do? Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Mary, last week in our history class, our teacher asked us if we knew anything about Thanksgiving Day. We all looked at each other. Nobody could give the answer. So, please tell me something about it, will you?
Oh, it's a long story. I don't think you've got the patience.
Come on, I'm really interested. Is it a national holiday in the United States?
Yes, it is a most truly American holiday, and it's closely connected with the earliest history of the country.
When was it first celebrated?
In 1621, by the English settlers or pilgrims.
What people were the pilgrims?
They were religious people from England. At that time, they didn't have the right to worship in their own way. They sailed to America on the Mayflower to have freedom of worship.
What happened to them when they got to America?
During their first winter, over half of the settlers died of starvation or epidemics. The survivors began farming, hunting, and fishing, and labored hard.
Did they have a good harvest the first year?
Yes. The yield was rich beyond their expectations. That's why they decided to fix a day to give their thanks to God.
Oh, I see. How do people in the States celebrate it now? And when is it?
The fourth Thursday of November is Thanksgiving Day. It is an occasion of family reunion. The most traditional and favorite food on the dinner table is roast turkey and pumpkin pie. Of course, with lots more to eat.
Okay, you've helped me out. I'd like to treat you to ice cream. Let's get going. Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. Where did the man hear of Thanksgiving Day for the first time? Question 20. When was Thanksgiving Day first celebrated? Question 21. What people were the pilgrims? Conversation 2. Maths Department, Dr. Winston speaking.
Hello, Professor Winston. This is Eliza Smith calling. I'm living two doors down from your teaching assistant, David Williams. David asked me to call you because he lost his voice and can't talk to you himself.
Lost his voice? Oh, what a shame. Is there anything I can do for him?
Well, he has a class this afternoon from 2:30 to 4, and he won't be able to teach it, but he doesn't want to cancel it either.
Want me to try to find somebody else to teach the class?
No, not exactly. What he wants to do is to get someone to go in for him, just to pass back the midterm exams. He's already marked them, and they are on the desk in his office. The whole thing wouldn't take more than 10 minutes.
His class is at 2:30, huh? Well, at that time, I am going to be on campus anyway, so I can do it for him. What room is his class in?
Building 4, room 214. Will you need his office key to get the exams? He's given it to me, and I could bring it to you.
Actually, that won't be necessary. We have a master key in the math department, so I can get into his office if necessary.
Thanks very much, Professor Winston. David doesn't have another class to teach until Tuesday, and hopefully he will be able to talk by then. He'll call you as soon as he can. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. Could you put the next assignment on the board, too? It's all the problems on page 45, and they are due at the next class.
No trouble at all. Thanks for passing all the news about David, and please tell him not to worry about anything.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 22. What's David's problem? Question 23. What favor does David want someone to do for him? Question 24. What does Eliza offer to do? Question 25. What does Eliza almost forget to ask Professor Winston? Section B.
Passage 1. Hello, everybody. I am here. I visited caves all over North America. Since you are going to study cave formations, Dr. Bo asked me to come and share some of my experiences with you. In addition to describing some of the technical aspects of the caves, I would convey the sense of adventure that cavers share. Recently, I visited the La Chaguire Cave in New Mexico. My dream has always been to discover a new passageway. I had a chance here because La Chaguire is so large that discoveries are frequently made there. The cave itself was not even discovered until 1986. However, people in that area had figured that there must be a cave nearby because of the strong wind that blew from behind the huge rock that covered the entrance. Enormous amounts of air enter and exit the cave in order to maintain balance of the pressure with the side cliff. When I climbed into the cave, I had to fight 45-mile-per-hour winds. After all that effort, I had to be extremely careful maintaining my energy level. People who are tired tend to be careless and may be more concerned about getting out of the cave than taking care of it. There are formations in La Chaguire that look like ocean waves, Christmas trees, and other stuff no one has ever seen before. Caves are normally created by carbonic acid that trickles down from above, but this cave was sculpted out by very powerful sulfuric acid that wells up from below.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. Why was the speaker especially excited about visiting La Chaguire Cave? Question 27. What did the speaker say about the entrance into the cave? Question 28. What did the speaker say about the cavers who get tired? Passage 2. As you prepare to become elementary school teachers, you'll be hearing a lot of discussions about the relevance of teaching penmanship. Now, years ago, when I was studying education in college, reading, writing, and arithmetic were the basics of elementary school education. It went without saying that writing meant first and foremost penmanship. That is, the neatness of a child's handwriting. It was considered so important that sometimes prizes were even awarded for the best handwriting. But when we move ahead a few decades into the 1980s, we see teachers and administrators and even parents telling us that teaching penmanship is a waste of time. With computers, they said, children can successfully manipulate the keyboard or mouse of their home computers before they can even hold a pencil. This change in attitude had an impact on the classroom. In your homework for this week, you'll be looking at what statewide curricula standards in the US say about penmanship. You'll see that in many states, penmanship has been de-emphasized in a required curriculum, especially in the later years of elementary school. In California, for example, the curriculum calls for fourth grade students to, and I quote, write fluently and legibly in cursive or grades. But after this, the curriculum makes no further mention of penmanship in grades 5, 6, or beyond. Any higher level of quality or neatness is simply not among the curricular objectives. Your assignment is to look at what the curricular standards for all 50 states say about penmanship.
Questions 29 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. What is the professor's main point about penmanship in early childhood education? Question 30. Why does the professor mention prizes? Question 31. What will the students read about for homework? Question 32. What does the professor quote from California's curriculum requirements? Passage 3. If a city ever needed tall buildings in a hurry, it was Chicago in the 1880s. Located in the center of America's farmland, with rail links to every coast, it was a natural hub of commerce for the entire continent and one of the fastest-growing cities in the country. The Great Chicago Fire of 1871 made the need for tall buildings urgent even before the 1880s. The fire raged for 2 days and wiped out one-third of all the buildings in the city. The fire was so destructive that when architect William LeBaron Jenney began work on the home insurance building 12 years later, rebuilding was still underway. According to legend, Jenney was working on his design for the home insurance building one afternoon in 1883 when a bird began making so much noise that he couldn't concentrate. He got so angry that he grabbed the heaviest book he could find and pounded furiously on the bird's steel wire cage to shut it up. The cage could have broken after such abuse, Jenny thought afterwards, but it didn't. It didn't even dent. If steel cages were so strong, he realized, why not make buildings out of steel? Why not build the home insurance building with steel? But in the early 1880s, buildings were still rarely taller than 6 or 7 stories, and it wasn't just because people hated slow elevators or climbing stairs. Bricks, the standard construction materials of the time, were too heavy to build much higher than that. To support a tall structure, the lower walls would have to be so thick that there would be little floor left. Besides, why use so many bricks to add just one floor when the same number of bricks could be used to construct an entire building somewhere else? Steel, on the other hand, is so much lighter and can carry so much more weight than brick that you can build more than 100 floors before you run into the same type of problem.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 33. Why were buildings so short in the early 1880s? Question 34. What was steel's outstanding feature? Question 35. What can be inferred about buildings in Chicago after steel was used? Section C. Now listen to the passage.
The traditional belief that a woman's place is in the home and that a woman ought not to go out to work can hardly be reasonably maintained in present conditions. It is said that it is a woman's task to care for the children, but families today tend to be small. Thus, a woman's whole period of childbearing may occur within 5 years. Furthermore, with compulsory education from the age of 5 or 6, her role as chief educator of her children soon ceases. It might be argued that the house-proud woman would still find plenty to do about the home. That may be so, but it is certainly no longer necessary for a woman to spend her whole life cooking, cleaning, mending, and sewing. Apart from women's own happiness, the needs of the community must be considered. Modern society cannot do well without the contribution that women can make in professions and other kinds of work. There is a serious shortage of nurses and teachers, to mention only 2 of the occupations followed by women. It is extremely wasteful to give years of training at public expense only to have the qualified teacher or nurse marry after a year or two and be lost forever to her profession. The training, it is true, will help her in duties as a mother, but if she continued to work, her service would be more widely useful. Many factories and shops, too, are largely staffed by women, many of them married. While here the question of training is not so important, industry and trade would be seriously short of staff if married women did not work.
Now the passage will be read again. The traditional belief that a woman's place is in the home and that a woman ought not to go out to work can hardly be reasonably maintained in present conditions. It is said that it is a woman's task to care for the children, but families today tend to be small. Thus, a woman's whole period of childbearing may occur within 5 years. Furthermore, with compulsory education from the age of 5 or 6, her role as chief educator of her children soon ceases. It might be argued that the house-proud woman would still find plenty to do about the home. That may be so, but it is certainly no longer necessary for a woman to spend her whole life cooking, cleaning, mending, and sewing. Apart from women's own happiness, the needs of the community must be considered. Modern society cannot do well without the contribution that women can make in professions and other kinds of work. There is a serious shortage of nurses and teachers, to mention only two of the occupations followed by women. It is extremely wasteful to give years of training at public expense only to have the qualified teacher or nurse marry after a year or two and be lost forever to her profession. The training, it is true, will help her in duties as a mother, but if she continued to work, her service would be more widely useful. Many factories and shops, too, are largely staffed by women, many of them married. While here the question of training is not so important, industry and trade would be seriously short of staff if married women did not work.
The traditional belief that a woman's place is in the home and that a woman ought not to go out to work can hardly be reasonably maintained in present conditions. It is said that it is a woman's task to care for the children, but families today tend to be small. Thus, a woman's whole period of childbearing may occur within 5 years. Furthermore, with compulsory education from the age of 5 or 6, her role as chief educator of her children soon ceases. It might be argued that the house-proud woman would still find plenty to do about the home. That may be so, but it is certainly no longer necessary for a woman to spend her whole life cooking, cleaning, mending, and sewing. Apart from women's own happiness, the needs of the community must be considered. Modern society cannot do well without the contribution that women can make in professions and other kinds of work. There is a serious shortage of nurses and teachers, to mention only two of the occupations followed by women. It is extremely wasteful to give years of training at public expense only to have the qualified teacher or nurse marry after a year or two and be lost forever to her profession. The training, it is true, will help her in duties as a mother, but if she continued to work, her service would be more widely useful. Many factories and shops, too, are largely staffed by women, many of them married. While here the question of training is not so important, industry and trade would be seriously short of staff if married women did not work.